Hello, everyone. It's really wonderful to see you, to see all of your faces, and always teaching with Sangha Live to see all of the places in the world that you're coming from. It feels really delightful to me to be connected in this network of people all over the globe that are wanting deeper awakening, to wanting to practice, to be together as a Sangha in this exploration. And for me, especially to have fellow travelers who are willing to come and look honestly and openly at sex and intimacy. It's not something that happens every day to be amongst people that are open and curious in that way. So I'm very happy that you're all here together with me to do this. And I want to start by acknowledging that a lot of different feelings can come up when we turn towards this topic. You know, like Marnie was saying, I've been teaching, practicing in the realms of the erotic, and you know, by that I mean desire and intimacy, sex, connection. It's been almost 18 years, and I still have feelings when I turn towards it because it's a feeling-filled arena. And you know, a lot of what we're going to be talking about today is how to not try to cut that off or arise above it, but actually turn towards it. So I really want to invite whatever you're feeling to come with you today, that all of it is welcome. And that includes if you're really excited, if you're nervous, if you feel kind of numb or indifferent, if you feel scared, whatever is here, it's really all welcome. And that also is that whatever different parts of you, however different parts of you experience sexuality and intimacy, so whatever your background, whatever your gender, your sexual orientation, relationship status, you know, even how you experience desire. It's all welcome here. And I welcome you, and I want to invite you to welcome all of this that's inside you. And so maybe we can even take a moment and just notice what's there and to welcome it in. I really find that that is the best way to get to know the nature of things, is by this radical kind of welcoming. And we're going to go into doing a seated meditation practice where we're going to do more of that. And we'll start by sitting, and we'll do probably for about, let's see, around 25 minutes. And then I'm going to talk more about how we can have this stance of radical welcoming in our intimate lives so that we can truly come to understand how this all works inside of us and between us and others, and how we can have more joy and freedom there. So let's start by sitting. And, you know, if there's anything you need to do to be comfortable to sit still for about 20 minutes, please do that now. You know, sometimes we just rush to get here, whatever time of day it is for you. So if there's anything you need to do to calm your surroundings, or put away distractions, you can go ahead and do that. And then take a moment to orient to the space around you. You know, again, sometimes we might rush to the cushion and then just want to close our eyes. But meanwhile, our attention is all over the place, and it is really natural and very helpful to orient and to look around. You know, for me, I love looking out my window and just noticing the birds outside and checking out the space around me. And that can really help settle our systems. It's also a great tool of noticing and coming into presence. So once you've done that, you can also turn that orienting towards your own body. And notice, oh, we are sitting here not just in a mind. We are sitting here in a body. And can you feel it? You know, if you actually take a moment to tune in. What do you feel in your body? It can actually help if you can't feel your body, to squeeze it a little and notice how that feels. Sometimes that helps us land. Could be pressing your feet into the ground, relaxing back into the chair behind you, feeling the contact, recognizing and experiencing this body. And once it feels like you're starting to land here, once it feels like you're starting to settle in, if it's available to you, you can go ahead and close your eyes, or you can let them be soft towards the ground. Now that you're oriented to what's outside, we can direct more of the attention inwards. And as you settle, notice where it's easiest for you to connect through your body. And this can be somewhere that's neutral or even on the edge of a little pleasant, like an anchor that you can come back to throughout this meditation or even in our time together, whenever things become too intense or hard to stay present with. It's really helpful to have an anchor in your body that you can return to. So for me, I can really feel the contact of my sits bones on my chair. And for me, that's pretty. It's a warmth and it's neutral. And so find something like that in your own body where your attention can rest. As your attention rests there, get curious about what happens next. What arises next as you rest into this anchor in your body? Might be sensations that arise there or elsewhere in your body. Welcome those in. Be curious. You might become more aware of the rise and fall of your breath. And you can turn your attention there, not needing to lean in or grab it, but rest back and allow it. Allowing the experience of the rising and expanding of the breath, and allowing the experience of the relaxing and exhaling of the breath. Once again, getting curious about what happens as you relax into the breath. What happens next? Welcoming whatever's arising inside of you, this radical welcoming. As you welcome with what's present, you can also be curious about how you're relating to it. Is there an openness to what's arising here in your experience? Is there kind of a grasping onto it, or maybe a mild aversion towards it? Maybe you're a little checked out. So just be aware, oh, this is how I'm relating to my experience right now. That's curious. That's interesting. And including that as well in your awareness. You notice you're really gripped by something or really checked out or pushing something away. That's okay. You can welcome that experience too. It's like, oh, this is what it's like to be experiencing this. I really invite you to bring some compassion towards whatever experience is arising. This too. Can I be open towards this too so I can know it? If you find you're having a hard time being with something, you can use the support of your hand. You could place your hand wherever you most feel that thing in your body. Just let your hand be a support to your attention, bringing attention and presence to this internal experience. And then once again, noticing what happens next. What's it like to be open, to be present with this thing that's arising? In the last few minutes of this meditation, I want to invite you to particularly turn your attention towards anything that's arising for you in the realm of sex and intimacy. It might be thoughts or emotions, it might be sensations in the body. We don't often include our genitals when we meditate. At least you don't often hear it in instructions, but I want to invite you to include your genitals. What do you notice there? What sensations, what feelings, what experiences are alive inside of your intimate body? And remembering if what you feel is numbness, that's a sensation too. Taking one more minute to recognize what's occurring in your inner world. I'm going to invite you to slowly open your eyes and expand your attention to include all of us here. Also, part of your experience. And just notice how that feels to be in connection with this awareness and how that might shift your internal state or expand it. And to see to be what it's like to be present with that too. Oh, here I am with, I don't know, maybe 50 or 60 people online. And that's what it feels like to be here today in connection. Sometimes we can really have this depth of presence internally. And then as soon as we open our eyes and make contact with another human, that awareness goes out the window. We're suddenly caught in the storm of human feelings. And so we can really practice that flexibility of awareness, internal awareness and external awareness, and really the permeability between the two. So as we go along today, I really want to invite you to practice keeping a little bit of your attention inwards and notice what's coming up for you, what's arising both in your body and in your consciousness as we explore sex and intimacy. Because, of course, that's so much of the practice of mindful sex and intimacy is to be aware of what's happening within us, between us, in all of those regards. So we can practice that as we are just going along today. And you can do that by, even as I'm talking, right now as I'm talking, I can see you, I can say my words, and I can still feel where my hand is rested on my thigh. And that gives me a little anchoring into my own body. And I can notice as things arise and I can acknowledge them without them taking over. And I can still be in connection with you. So you can play with that. It can be one of our sort of little experiments as we go along here today. So I wanted to start by reading something. One of my favorite poems by a 15th century Zen master named Ikkyu. He's a lot of really great poems when it comes to the Dharma of sex and intimacy. And this one goes like this. The autumn breeze of a single night of love is better than 100,000 years of sterile sitting meditation. Monks these days study hard in order to turn a fine phrase and win fame as talented poets. At Crazy Cloud's hut, there is no such talent, but he serves up the taste of truth as he boils rice in a wobbly old cauldron. So, welcome to Crazy Cloud's hut, which really you could say is a metaphor for our life as people who are not monastics, who are living in the world and engaging in very human experiences. Of course, I love meditation. There's a reason I teach it. I've been practicing for close to 30 years, hard to believe. And also, what EQ points to us here is that there is something powerful and revealing and deeply dharmic in what he calls, one night of love, a single night of love, when we could really say a lifetime. And so that's what we're going to explore. And I really want to say we're going to be talking about things we don't often talk about, maybe even with ourselves, certainly in our sanghas. You may never have heard before genitals mentioned in a guided meditation. I often think of them like the basement of the body, a place that, we might rarely open or look at, where we store all kinds of things and, things that easily can get hidden because we don't have a lot of conscious awareness there. And yet, it's also an arena that is capable of so much pleasure. And the genitals are really symbolic of our intimate lives. They're really, in some ways, the seat in our bodies of our intimate lives. A.H. Almas, who was the founder of the Diamond Approach, which was a school of Dharma study, he actually said, essence is not really embodied unless it can stay in your genitals, and that it's nothing to go to the topmost chakra and see many things. He said, anybody can do that in 3 months, but that's not true realization. It's an experience. It's an experience when we can, have these moments of quote unquote enlightenment or clarity. And he says it's nice, it's useful, but this all needs to come down into our bodies so that we can be it. That it's not just something we see, not something that we just see theoretically, but that we are it. So he says it needs to come down into our bodies. Into our genitals, like I said, that seat of our intimate experience. In other words, the 13th century Chinese master Sun Yan said, in order to know the way being the Dharma, and in perfect clarity, there is one essential point you must penetrate and not avoid. You must penetrate and not avoid the red thread of passion that cannot be severed. Few face the problem, and it is not at all easy to settle. Address it directly, without hesitation, for how else can liberation come? So, this is quite an invitation, right? How do we address it directly and without hesitation, because certainly we all feel hesitation in this area. But how do we penetrate it and not avoid it? How do we embody it, like A.H. Almas is calling us to do? And the most fundamental invitation that you're going to hear me give over and over today is to turn towards it. to turn towards both the 10,000 joys of it and to turn towards the 10,000 sorrows and to know it intimately, both in our bodies, in our genitals, in our hearts, in our minds, in all of this. So, as I'm talking, you can even start reflecting and thinking like, oh, how does it feel as I turn towards this aspect of myself? What comes up even when I consider feeling tuning into my genitals, into my intimate body? Maybe there's shame, maybe there's excitement, maybe there's disgust, maybe there's numbness, maybe there's turn on. What is it like to turn and welcome it all? And like I said, welcome both the pleasure and the pain, because we really want to recognize both, and we all have both. Even we have a tremendous amount of pain in the realm of intimacy, there is also some moments of joy. And even if we have a lot of joy, a lot of goodness, there are definitely moments of suffering. It's part of our human experience. So let's include both. I have to say, when I was really young on my Dharma journey and I was doing a lot of practice, I was sitting a lot of longer retreats, 3 months at a time, I had a lot of questions about sex and intimacy, how to embody it, how to work with this red thread, as the great Zen masters talk about. I had a really conflicted relationship. It was a location for me of a lot of suffering, some moments of pleasure, but also a lot of suffering. And, I had some good relationships, but not great ones. And I'd had some decent sex, but not deeply transformative. And I was doing this Dharma practice that was so beautiful. Like, I could sit in solitude and in silence and access gorgeous states. But then what I found, because I did several of these retreats, is as soon as the retreat was over and they'd ring the bell and say, now it's time to start talking to others, I would be flooded with an anxiety, with a confusion, with like a hunger and at the same time an aversion of like, wow, how do I be with all of this inside of me? And I actually wondered if I might want to go the way of monasticism, of just say like, wow, this is too much. But I had some intuition inside that said, don't cut any part out. Like that, for you, if you're going to become a monastic, make sure, first of all, that you're not doing it because you're trying to escape something. I started to look around and wanting to understand more deeply how to work with this. And at that time, I had a mentor, someone who had worked with me. They've been really wonderful and supportive, wise in so many ways. But when I brought this question to them and said, like, what about sex? What about intimacy? They just said, don't even bother. It is impossible to be mindful in sex. So basically, abandon the quest. And I was like, wow, when I, at the moment, I think it really shook me. And I look back and I realize, each of us, even sometimes some incredibly wise beings, don't necessarily have a relationship to sex and intimacy and that brings an awareness. So it's really up to each of us to be on our own journey with it. I was reflecting as I was putting this talk together, in fact, actually, about some of the traditional teachings that would have informed that teacher of mine, right? They're not really known for their depth of insight into sex and intimacy. The Buddhist teachings were largely made for monastics. And so, there was an acknowledgement that sex is incredibly powerful. And in fact, the Buddha said, there is no desire more powerful than sex. Sex as a desire has no equal. And actually, what he said is that fortunately, there's no other power like it, because if there was, nobody would wake up. So he saw, like, wow, this thing is so powerful. And if there was even one other human experience that had so much power, in us, that it would be so hard for us to wake up. And now, because of that, he went the direction and he would say things like, it is better that your penis enters the mouth of a poisonous snake or a burning pit of blazing coals than it enter a woman's vagina. You know, in other suttas, he would say things like, compared to the sound, the smell, the taste, or touch of a woman, I do not see a single thing that is so arousing, sensuous, intoxicating, captivating, infatuating, and such an obstacle to reaching the enlightenment as a woman. And he goes on and on and on about, you know, really what a woman can evoke in his mind in a man. And he said, if anyone should be rightly called an all-round snare of Mara, Mara meaning delusion or temptation, it is females. Yikes, right? We almost hear a lot of Christian Puritanism in those verses. And, you know, culturally, historically, in context, we have to see he's really trying to dissuade those young male monastics from leaving the order. and so the approach that he took was work against the impulses of the human body, try to cut them off, try to see them as horrific, and really to try to break what, you know, we've been told is an unbreakable red thread. And now, because we're not monastics, that's not our path. But as lay practitioners, the only instruction we were really given was to not cause harm. It basically, the precept around sexuality, around intimacy is, I undertake the course of training to abstain from sexual misconduct. And originally in Dharma teachings, that just meant adultery. And it actually meant adultery of a man taking another man's wife. Again, historical context. And then, you know, over the centuries, you know, by like 15th century, maybe a little earlier, they had started to elaborate on that, on like what sexual misconduct means. So it included things like sex between men, masturbation, oral sex, anal sex, hand jobs, sex during the day. But it didn't prohibit sex between women, men hiring prostitutes. And it actually permitted heterosexual men to have up to, but not more than, 5 orgasms a night. So we have some interesting stuff here, right? I'm like, wow, you know, we can really see that in every spiritual lineage, there is cultural and historical overlays that we have to read within the context of the time. And when we read these things, they're not as helpful for us when we're in the 21st century, when we're not living as monastics, when we have a much more nuanced and complex understanding of sex, of gender, of relationship. But what we can get overall is that the Buddha saw that sex was powerful, and pretty much every teacher in the lineage saw it as really that powerful. And so they focused really on the 10,000 sorrows of sex and intimacy. But, you know, if we step back, we can actually see that sexual energy isn't good or bad. It's not inherently good or bad, you know, and actually in Dharma teachings, nothing is inherently good or bad. It's neutral. It's natural. And in fact, it's not the energy of sex or of desire that causes problems, but how we relate to it. You know, intimacy can be incredibly nourishing and supportive and enlivening. We know that, you know, maybe again, you can just think of like any little moments you've had where it's been that experience to you. And also, if we're not conscious of it, it can become really intoxicating, or it can become incredibly confusing. But ultimately, it's a way that we can get to know ourselves. We can get to know our unconscious material. And I think we saw that's what was happening to those monks that the Buddha was talking to, right? There was a lot of unconscious material that was getting stirred up. You know, kind of these implicit responses we have, the non-conscious responses we have. And again, the Buddha just said, don't even go there. But we're going to go there because we do go there. So how do we do that? I actually find the most helpful Dharma teaching when it comes to understanding our sexuality comes from when the Buddha teaches about what he calls the three poisons. Well, I don't know what he called them, but that's how they've been interpreted. And the Buddha taught that there were three things that are at the root of our suffering, if of anything, and that's greed, aversion, and delusion. So if we think of this precept, this training to not cause harm in sexuality, we could start looking at where do we have greed, where do we have aversion, and where do we have delusion in our intimate lives? And again, I want to even say these things aren't inherently bad. You could think of greed, aversion, and delusion like warning signs, like they're red flags that say, hey, there's something here to look at. There's something here that needs healing and needs liberation. And so, actually, it's one of the reasons I don't even think of them as poisons. I would think of them as burdens. They're things that we, attitudes and actions that we take on because we don't have better responses, more enlightened or liberated responses. So you could think of like, huh, how has my intimate life, how's my sexual experiences been burdened by greed, aversion, and delusion, by these things that cause suffering? And it's often a lot more subtle than we think. So, I'm going to give you a couple of examples, right? Like with greed, it might be being so concerned with your own experience in a relationship, like either your own pain or your own desire, that you actually don't tune into or really see the person in front of you. We've all been there, right? So caught up in something or so wanting something. It's like the other person is just there to be an object that's meant to feed us. Or we might try to use sex to try to fulfill other needs, like to feel wanted or to feel like we're a good partner, to feel like we belong. So we could see how this experience of greed comes in and it starts to distort our intimate experiences. And as I read these, you might just listen and be like, huh, yeah, like how does greed show up for me in that, like, so being focused on something that I lose an awareness. Or being so consumed by needing to be something that I actually am not present to the experience that's happening. Delusion can show up like a numbness in our bodies, not really being present when it comes to sex or intimacy, like checking out, not letting yourself even know your own desires, and really also not even seeing the person that you're with, like just being lost in projections on like, well, this person's this way or this person's that way. Either they're so great and we don't actually see the complexity of who they are, or they're so terrible because we're so mad at them. These are all delusions, right? So, and maybe one of the greatest delusions that people can fall into is the fantasy that we're going to find the perfect partner that's going to fulfill all of our sexual and emotional needs without us ever having to say anything about it. So, what delusion fuels your sex life? Like the idea either that like I don't need it, or that this person's going to fulfill it, or that, I'm just checked out of it. And then, of course, when we have aversion, it might come across as like a puritanism. I actually, honestly, you see a lot of aversion towards sexuality often in Dharma teachings. Like, this is bad, don't go there. But it might be judging sex as like dumb or worthless. You might fear sex or intimacy. You might deny your own real desires. You might even just be like, that shop's closed up. Forget about it. It's like those are all forms of aversion, right? So it's like, oh yeah, how has aversion come into my attitude towards sex and intimacy? So these three things, and they're just helpful points of reflection. How does greed show up? How does delusion show up? And how does aversion show up? And if you're feeling like there's something not working around sex and intimacy for you, you might want to use those and do some self-reflection. Like, huh, what's happening here? This is an inquiry. And like I said, it's not like you're bad, you're feeling greedy or deluded or aversive. It's like a little flag that's saying, hey, hey, there's something here. And this is where, you know, I will depart from the more classic teachings of, you know, just cut something off or just rise above it. Sometimes even classic teachings, we hear things like eliminate, like it can be actually quite violent kind of language, you know, attack this poison. And I want to offer something instead, which is, like I said at the beginning, is a radical welcoming. Because, you know, we can even think of in relationships and intimacy, it's really when someone radically welcomes us that we feel safe enough to really reveal what's inside of us. Or it's when someone radically welcomes us sexually that we feel like, oh my gosh, I can really open. You know, at least it's the beginning of it. So what if we radically welcome our patterns of greed, delusion, and aversion and get to know them? And I want to give you 4 steps to doing this. And then I actually want to do a really brief reflection so you can see how it works. And there's, well, 4 steps, 4 qualities. The first one is conscious attention. So can you consciously turn your attention towards these things? And then the second being curiosity, rather than judging them, rather than pushing them away or thinking you're a bad person, can you get curious about them? Like, wow, fascinating. Look at this delusion I'm creating, or look at how this thing that I'm pushing away, what's so interesting. Let me really get curious. So we have conscious attention, we have curiosity, and then we have compassion, to really be compassionate with this response that we're having, with this attitude or this experience. And I'm going to say a little bit more about that, about compassion, because, again, you know, when these things come up, we can have so much reaction to them. But the Buddha actually said, you can search the whole tenfold universe and not find a single being more worthy of love and compassion than yourself. And he went on and said, like a caring mother holding and guarding the life of her only child, so with a boundless heart of loving kindness, hold yourself and all beings as your beloved children. So, you know, that was a fundamental teaching. So what actually is it like that to apply that to our, truly to ourselves and to all aspects of ourselves? To, like a caring mother holds and guards the life of her only child, so with a boundless heart of loving kindness, hold yourself. So what if you even held your aversion, your delusion, your confusion, your greed with that same loving kindness, with a curiosity? And to do it courageously, that's the 4. So if we have conscious attention, curiosity, compassion, and courage, because it takes courage to turn towards this stuff. You know, there's a reason often it's called the shadow, or that the Buddha said it was so powerful. It takes courage. But what we find, and what I see, because I sit with people every day doing this work, I train meditation teachers. I also sit with a lot of individuals and couples as they really explore this, is that when you apply those 4 qualities, that a deeper intimacy with ourself reveals that all of those ways in which we act out, all of that suffering that we have, are really management strategies. And they come because we really haven't learned how to have another way to free ourselves of the pain that's underneath. You know, and usually that pain comes from shame. You know, at the root of it all is usually some kind of shame, some kind of fear of who we are, of our desires, of our sensations, of our experiences. And at the, we have the shame underneath, and over top, we have all of these ways that we try to make up for it. We try to grab for things, that we try to push them away, that we try to check out. And the really the only way I've seen to get to that root is to meet it with this curious attention, with this compassion, with this courage. So I want to spend a couple of minutes. We're just going to do this for a couple of minutes. I want to actually invite you to explore this a little bit in yourself. So take a moment and just bring to mind an experience or feeling you have towards sex, towards intimacy, that you could say like has a quality of greed or aversion or delusion. Just like those ways I was talking about it, where we might feel this like clinging or this trying to get something or this pushing away or this numbness or confusion. So bring it up inside yourself like, okay. I can think around sex, around intimacy. That's how something might be playing out inside of me. And I want you to get curious of how it shows up in your body, you know, in your heart and your mind when it's present, when you're feeling that hunger or that aversion or that delusion. What comes up? How does it show up for you? So just, you know, this is where we practice the curious attention. You might feel it like a gnawing in your chest or sinking in your stomach or a tightness in your jaw. There might be kinds of different thoughts that come up, like that other person, how terrible they are, how sad you feel. And as you touch in with that experience, notice how you feel towards it. So as you feel that, you know, whatever it is, a sadness or a jealousy or a rage or hunger, how do you feel towards it? And this is where I want to invite you to look for curiosity, to look for compassion. Can you be curious and compassionate with this experience inside? And if it feels like you can't, if there's some other part that's like, I hate that I feel this way. Like I'm just so disgusted with myself, you know, or I feel so hopeless. Well, turn your attention towards that, to that hopelessness or that disgust. And let's meet that with some curiosity and compassion. And like I said, in the guided meditation, it can help to place your hand wherever you're most experiencing it. And just letting that aspect inside of you know that you're present with it, that you're actually curious, that you're offering it some compassion. And just check what it wants you to know, what's happening for it. And just see maybe through sensation or images or words if there's anything it wants to tell you. Maybe it wants to tell you how it came to feel this way. Or what it's afraid might happen if it didn't do what it's doing. Like if there's a numbness or a rage, like what is it afraid might happen if it stopped feeling so numb? Or if it stopped feeling so rageful? And just continue to offer it your attention, your curiosity, your compassion. And see what happens as it receives that. So really just a brief taste of the practice we can do with ourselves. And if you noticed anything that you want to share, you could put it in the chat. As you did that, as you started practicing. I see there's somebody who has to go. Thank you for coming. Nice to see you, Helen. So this is really the beginning of intimacy with ourselves, right? Is a deep intimacy with all aspects of ourselves. And that's really foundational to intimacy with anyone else, is to have the intimacy with both the joy and both the suffering, both what we could consider light and what we might consider dark, to have this complete openness and receptivity. And the truth is, when we do that, when we can start to have this intimacy with ourselves, we become so much more available to be intimate with others, truly intimate, without looking to them to be our caretaker or our liberator. Like, oh, they're going to be the one that relieves me of this suffering, of this pain. Because we become our primary liberator, right? We can actually learn to be present with our feelings and our experiences, and we can speak up for them. And then, whoever we're in contact with, they can be our secondary caretaker. Like we can be in loving relationship, but it's not their primary job to do that. And then as we do this more for ourselves, as we come into relationship with all of these different parts of ourselves, and we were focusing on painful parts, but also could be like desires, curiosities, turn-ons, energy, when we are really intimate with those, then we can also be more intimate with our partners. Rather than feeling so afraid of these different experiences that arise inside of our partner or partners, and then needing to manage them, oh my gosh, I need to like badger them. I need to somehow manage them into being what I want. We can actually be curious, like, wow, what's this fascinating part inside of my partner? And we have the space to do that. And this is ultimately, it's not through cutting off part of ourselves, certainly not cutting off our sexuality, not cutting off any of these experiences that we're talking about today. But it's when we welcome them that they're actually able to relax and open some space. And that's really kind of the secret, like the alchemy of working with greed, hatred, and delusion. Is that when we're present with them, when they can start revealing their underlying story, like I said, that's an ongoing process, then they can naturally relax back and open, what I'd call our Buddha nature, like this generous, joyful, spontaneous nature. And that's where all of the deepest sex and intimacy comes from. It's not through all of the strategizing, manipulating, trying to manage ourselves and others. It's through helping this all relax back. And that's our innate nature underneath. And so that's really my invitation to you is to not be afraid of any of it. Or if there is fear, to be with that fear, with a kindness, with a loving attention. But to be curious, to turn your conscious attention, to bring a curiosity, to bring compassion, and to do it all with courage. And when we do this, and when we develop over time this intimacy with all of this inside of us, complete intimacy with ourselves and all parts of ourselves, then naturally the joys, the 10,000 joys of intimacy and sexuality can flow. And that's how you work with the red thread. That's how you fully embody. That's really the practice of it. So I want to give us time for Q&A because we have just over 20 minutes. And if I and in this, I might sprinkle in some ways that, from this place of liberation, from this place of our pain being able to relax back, of how we might be able to apply some of this curiosity and compassion and attention, in the experiences of sex and intimacy themselves. So I might sprinkle some of that in. But I'm going to open it up to Q&A. And, One thing that I want to say is that at this time, I know some people may need to go. But also that if you want to stay, there's a couple of options. You can raise your hand to ask questions, and you can unmute yourself, and you can either come on video or just audio, and we can chat. Or you could put a question in the chat and have it go there. And you can also chat me directly if you don't want everyone to see your question. So that's also works just fine, is that if you don't feel comfortable everyone reading your question or knowing who asked it, I won't say your name. So I know some of this is really vulnerable. So you can go ahead and just take a moment and reflect on, sharings or questions you have. And as you do this, I want to take a moment and pause and mention that this teaching today and all of Sangha Live's offerings are offered by Donna, by generosity. And if you feel moved to offer Donna, I know Marnie's going to provide a way that you can do that. And I want to say something about Donna is that for me, it's really about tuning in to myself of what genuinely feels right. And when, again, we move aside, when we're able to help relax back our aversions and our greeds and our delusions and all of that, we can just naturally feel what feels right. It's like, okay. The other day I was on a call with a teacher that worked by Donna, and I just automatically got a number in my head of what felt right. And when I asked them, what their suggested Donna was, they said, and I was like, oh, okay, I already know. And this is also a practice of intimacy with ourselves, right? That you could think deeply apply. It's like in some ways, a form of consent. Like, what actually feels right to me? What am I moved by? What feels good to me? So I invite you to tune in. And that could mean anything. That could mean it's not right for me today, or today it actually feels like it feels really right. And so tune in and see what feels good to you to offer. And I think Marnie's put the link there. In the chat. So, again, you're welcome to raise your hand, but I see some questions here in the chat. And I'll read the, I'm just going to go in order. So, choosing celibacy for many years, a few years ago, I can see how it can create a false image and a sense of subtle duality without realizing it. Such good noticing. I choose now to love and be intimate and experience the 10,000 joys, even though it can sometimes bring working with whatever comes. Yeah, thank you for that reflection. It does bring 10,000 joys and 10,000 sorrows. I mean, and it brings more joys the more we work with it. I can say that definitively. But yeah, it really, this is ultimately like in Zen practice and then in some Vajrayana practices. There is an understanding that there is no separation, and yet it's a very powerful energy. And so we can really turn towards it, and it isn't an either or, but we really develop our capacity to be with that potency. And sometimes we get burned. Sometimes we get burned, and that's part of learning to work with potent things in this world. So thanks for sharing that. Okay, let's see. Okay, so here's another one. Thank you for this. As someone who enjoys intimacy and practices Buddhism, I often wonder what place sex had in Buddhism. This today has me feel a lot more comfortable and curious. Well, thank you, Carlos. That is great to hear. If there is one thing you could walk away with, I would say curiosity and compassion. Just get curious. I remember on one of my probably my first 3 month retreat, there was a moment on the retreat when it dawned on me. I was in line at the dining hall, and it was like, wow, this whole practice is just being curious about what's happening in the moment. Like, that's literally what I have to do moment after moment for 3 months. It's like, and what's this? And what's this? And so the same thing, like, wow, what's this hunger? Wow, what's this numbness? What's this pushing away? Oh, what's this fear? And it's like, oh yeah, like, can we do that? Can we do that here? So I'm glad to know that it's awoken that for you. Okay. Here's another one. I noticed aversion born of the feeling that there is a pervasive current of shame around my body. How it looks or doesn't look the way I've been told is attractive, and feeling so exposed, even when my partner is clearly appreciating me. I'm also uncomfortable with its elemental natures, earthiness, its expressions of water and air, its smells, its liquids. What practice can I bring to my lovemaking to be with this shame? Thank you so much for bringing this up. I often talk about this, that sex actually is really about being messy. And it's very common. And my experience is often people who are born in female bodies have this experience. Maybe sometimes more often is feeling like we're supposed to be neat, we're supposed to be clean, we're supposed to be perfectly shaped and trimmed and shaved and all of this. And we know that when there's a real liberation in sex, juices are running, snot is flowing. There's just the body is open and alive and liquid. And it's not neat and packaged. And when we have so much, usually like cultural and societal conditioning around it, it can feel really scary. And so, I'd start by inviting you to be with the parts of yourself that have that shame and fear. Because usually we've picked that up somewhere that, wow, if I look this way, it means something. Or if I let this happen, this is what might happen. There's usually a deep fear or shame underneath. And so, theoretically, I can tell you through working, let's say, I've definitely talked to a lot of heterosexual couples about this, but actually of all couples, it's pretty rare that like one, a stretch mark or a little bit of like some nice juicy rolls or, some wrinkles that a partner finds these problematic when it comes to sex. It's usually not where the attention is. So I could tell you that theoretically, but actually intimately, what's most important is that you come into relationship with the parts of you that feel this way. So it could be taking some time outside of sex and intimacy to turn towards these parts. And if you have a lot of body trauma, working with a therapist or a guide can be really helpful. I really recommend that because sometimes these things are really tricky and they run really deep. That's the work that I do with a lot of people. But you can also start by just sitting and it can be in journaling or in a meditation of what is this? Like, what is this shame? Can I be with it with compassion? Can I be curious about it? And then it also can be helpful sometimes to hear stories of others, especially when it comes to that elemental nature of the body, and to just get that the cultural influence of positivity around it. For women who are in larger bodies, I often recommend like go look up, women who are really embodying their sex that are in a larger body. Or a post-childbirth body or an aging body and to find inspiration in that. And so there's a few different ways, but mostly I want to name like how much suffering there is in this. And suffering that's often not actually based in the true reality of how attraction and sex works, but suffering nonetheless. So yeah, and this is applied to anything. Is to first for us to be with it. So I hope that's helpful. And I'm really happy also for anyone to reach out to me who wants to talk more about how to do this kind of work. I'm always happy to talk about it. Okay. And just a note here that Marnie said, if anyone wants to ask a question and be on screen, but feels private, that we can also edit it out so it's not included in the recording. So You can direct message Marnie and ask for that if you'd like to come on and actually talk. And also, if you have a follow-up to any of your questions, but you don't want to be on screen, you can put them in the chat if you want to follow up. Okay, so we're going to go to our next one. I have a question about desire and what feels like an unskillful prioritizing of it in our culture. I live in Los Angeles. Yep. And how there's all these stories in media about entering into affairs being so hot and sexy and romantic, yada, yada. And so culturally, it feels like there's a vacillation between aversion, Puritanism, and greed, drug-fueled sex parties in LA and the Bay Area. Being skillful with Eros, but not to the point of going on some pleasure-seeking egotistical voyage masquerading as self-discovery. And I understand that this is largely a personal exploration and journey, but we also live in relationship in the sense of culture that impacts how people show up with us. And I wonder how to promote a healthy sexual culture that doesn't shame, but is still wise, if you could speak to this. Well, yeah. I mean, first of all, you point out so well, right? Our culture in America especially, but largely in the West, does oscillate, especially in America, between Puritanism and repression and just ignore it and don't have sex till you're married. And then once you get married, hopefully you know what you do, even though you never talk about it. And to, you know, porn and, you know, like very kind of exaggerated versions of sexuality. And, you know, which could also include like what could classically be called hedonism. And then it's like, well, what about all this terrain in between? And there's one thing I want to say. When we start turning consciously and start, if we've really leaned towards the puritanical, sometimes we start going over here and we make mistakes. Because being in this human realm, we are going to make mistakes. We're going to get hurt. We're going to explore, things might get messy, and then we can correct. And part of it is being aware of that and knowing how to make corrections. So not expecting like, oh, I can undo all of my conditioning without ever getting messy or making a mistake. I want to take some pressure off of people and give you like, yeah, you might go there and be like, wow, I went kind of unconscious. So how do I actually adjust? How do I look at where I went unconscious? But without it being so tight, you know, because we need a little room to get messy. Like we were talking before, sex has a natural messy element. That said, also, you know, does it feel like we're being driven by an unconscious greed? Like by like, oh my gosh, I could never have enough. Or do I need to intoxicate myself in order to go there? You know, probably some of our greatest sufferings come because we're intoxicated. We don't know how to get out of Puritanism, our own internalized misogyny and Puritanism. So we use drugs and alcohol to do it, but then it's not integrated. And so to actually learn how to be present with these things in ourselves, how to be present and awake and connected in sex without using a substance or a substitute to get us there, that's a deep practice. So I really want you all to give yourselves a little space and permission and also then to have your reflection and see that and to really take it on as a practice. I'm a great fan of taking sex and intimacy on as a practice. Like, let me go in. Let me develop consciousness. Literally, sometimes with people I work with, I say, set a timer. You know, set a timer, 10, 15 minutes. And explore what it's like to touch with your partner in a conscious way without goals, without like, we have to climax or we have to get this or I have to feel like a good lover and make you come. It's like, no, just put on a timer and spend 10 minutes kissing and being present and being curious and develop your capacity to be conscious, you know, or set aside some time and just touch. You know, with resonance and no goal and get to know what that's like. That's how we build the bridge. And then we don't need to go off to these extremes. So yeah, look at, you know, how could you maybe make it a practice that truly nourishes and that you're actually present for? Because the truth is, in a lot of those more extreme situations were not even actually present to truly enjoy them. Okay, we have a few more here. Once we identify a poison, how can we heal from it? One of mine is greed around needing external validation to feel good enough and make me feel important. Yeah. I mean, I think this one, first of all, is fairly universal, is the looking for external validation. It's quite biological, actually, if you think about how we evolved, that if we didn't have the external validation of our group, if we were at risk of ostracization, of being cast out of the tribe, that was a life or death experience. So I also, again, to have some compassion towards that impulse in yourself to look for it. And to know that there's, to some degree, there's a biological impetus. And then, just like the process that I led you through is to turn towards it. Like, wow, there's this incredible tenderness and anxiety that comes up. Can I stay present with that anxiety? Can I get curious? Like, what might happen if I don't get this external validation? And to be in an ongoing relationship with this part of you. So part of the therapeutic process I work with clients is called internal family systems. You might have heard of it. If you haven't, it's really worthy to look up. And it's this exact kind of practice where we get to know these things that are driving us, like this need for validation, and we get to the source of it and help liberate it so that thing isn't driving us. So, a great book, No Bad Parts by Dick Schwartz, can give you a fundamental introduction to it. Again, I'm also happy to talk more about it. But that's really in 25 years of doing this, is actually the most powerful method I've found, and that really has transformed my life and others that I work with. Okay, we got 5 minutes. Let's see how many more we can do here. Is real ecstasy born from staying embodied for prolonged times during intimacy? So if I read that right, I'd say ecstasy comes from moment to moment staying present. It doesn't have to be prolonged, because you could have, right here's a moment of ecstasy. Right here's a moment of ecstasy. And sometimes actually we aim for this huge ecstasy when we don't even know how to stay present moment by moment. You know, I had a teacher who used to say, like, how many minutes of intercourse can anyone truly stay present for? Meaning you're fully feeling, completely present, not another thought or distraction, but you're completely immersed. Probably about 60 seconds. And so if you start there, and grow, slowly expand. But sometimes we have these huge appetites for something. And like, it's beautiful. We have a hunger to experience something profound. But start small. Start with, like, can I stay present for this light touch and notice what comes up and build from there. And you'll find that there can be ecstasy just in 10 seconds. Okay. I struggle with porn addiction, and it's been a blocker for intimacy and has created unrealistic expectations on partners. I've tried abstaining, but how do you manage this level of conscious curiosity and compassion during moments when feeling lonely and tired? During those times, it feels impossible to not overindulge in desires and create an escapist cycle. First of all, just so much compassion, right, for that loneliness. And, I think porn really does, like, lock into both, just again, how our brains, and especially how the male brain, is oriented to visual cues and visual attraction. And it kind of uses that and locks in along with this loneliness to make a really challenging knot. And so, first of all, I'd say to have compassion, to know that that's what's happening. Like any addictive process, it's the same as scrolling on our phone. And believe me, pretty much we all do that, right? So none of us can fully escape the way that we get in these addictive patterns. And again, I come back to, so what part of me is drawn to do that right now? Like, if I pick up my phone and I'm scrolling, and I was like, wow, this is so fascinating. what's happening inside of me right now that I'm doing this? And I turn towards it and I get curious about it and what it has to say, what it's showing me. So I would just over and over come back to the same thing in this practice, whether it's porn, whether it's phone scrolling, whether it's eating over your desires, like you're not actually having sex, so you find yourself eating a ton of cookies, you know, like, wow, this is fascinating. Here I am on my fifth cookie. What's happening here? What's going on inside? What's actually calling for attention? That's the process over and over and over. Okay. I'm going to do one last one, then we're going to wrap up. I've had this experience a lot when I've been getting into a relationship or starting to feel deeper feels of love and emotionally attached. I have felt my sex, which was open at the beginning, and starts to feel more closed. I've started to feel very intimacy avoidant, and I've equated it to in the presence of love, sex might be more closed and needs won't get met, i.e. I can't have both good sex and love. Well, when we get into, thank you for the question, first of all. And what I see is that when we fall in love, it's high stakes. You know, there's more vulnerability. It ignites more of our attachment, you know, needs and desires. And so it can feel like, wow, it's riskier. Everything feels riskier. Because in the beginning, you know, there's a reason the Buddha taught about attachment. Maybe we don't have so much attachment. And then we do. So once again, I would say turn towards the part that gets afraid and get curious about it. Like, what is it afraid would happen if it opened its sex? What is it afraid might happen if it actually got turned on? And it's going to tell you. And that's what I want to say. We can have all of the theories in the world about this, but these things inside of us know. They actually have the answer. And so it's our willingness not to impose theories and judgments, but to meet them with curiosity and compassion so they can tell us, so then we can actually help them. And by them, I mean all of these parts of us inside. So that is really ultimately my teaching today. I really want to thank you all for joining me. I want to offer that if you would like to stay connected, that you can, I'm going to put in the chat, whoops, let's see. I'm going to put in the chat both my website, my Instagram, and my email address. And you can find me at any of those. And yeah, please reach out. You can tell I love talking about this stuff. It's so rich. It's so vulnerable. It has so much potential for awakening and liberation when we meet it with kindness, when we meet it with compassion, curiosity, and this conscious attention. So thank you to everyone who was willing to engage and ask the questions and explore together. It made this time so rich. And I want to invite you all to come off of mute and say goodbye so that we can actually all be connected together as we say goodbye.